laid low, then I brought that dog on.
Hello, how are we doing? I'm Christopher Brown.
I'm Oriel.
And I'm Paul. Good evening and welcome.
How are we doing? You all right? Welcome back once again for Talking Tripe and Twaddle.
Yeah.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Is it not tripping off the tongue just yet?
Tripping off the tongue.
No,
Talking Tripe and Twaddle, tripping off the tongue.
Oh, that was quite impressive.
The ladies love me.
Yeah, I bet they do.
I'm very skilled.
So this is about, it was called the Andes Disaster.
There's a few names, isn't there?
There's a few names.
Because I saw The Miracle in the Andes.
The Miracle in the Andes.
Mine's called Uruguayan Air Force Flight 571.
That's a bit too formal.
I think that's a bit too, so
I think Miracle in the Andes.
Miracle in the Andes or Alive. It was also nicknamed Alive.
I think the titles definitely mirror our personalities, don't they? Because I'm full of facts and spot on, and you're talking a load of fucking twaddle.
What? Miracle in the Andes?
The Miracle in the Andes.
Alive.
Trust me, when you've heard this story, there were no miracles.
There were small miracles.
There were a lot of pain and agony, but there were no miracles.
There was quite a few miracles. I'd like to think there were miracles, anyway. There was someone
Do you believe in an almighty?
Well, maybe, yeah. I believe in something.
Yeah.
Believe in something. So should we start the story?
You shut me down there. I wanted to know about your belief system.
I don't believe in God.
What do you believe in, Chris?
I believe in myself because myself believes in me.
Oh. I believe in life after love.
That book of quotes is doing you well.
Stay strong. You make your own luck.
Laugh, love.
Yeah.
Do you know what, hon? You amaze me, hon. Stay strong, girl. Stay strong.
That's all these lot needed,
yeah? Yeah.
They
had some inspiration, though, didn't they? They did have some inspirational quotes. Maybe not that, like Facebook, were they?
Yeah,
but they did have some.
They're not good enough for Facebook, definitely not. But they did all right.
So we're saying that if these lads had Facebook inspirational quotes, they would have
all survived.
And that would have been a miracle.
So this is the tale of Flight 571 that was heading for Chile.
So who's on the plane?
So we've got members of the Uruguayan rugby team.
The old Christians.
They've had a rugby match, or they're going to have a rugby match, and it's the two worst teams you've ever heard of.
Because that's an amateur club, and they're
It's the old Christians club versus the old boys club.
Oh.
An English rugby team, for reference, that they were playing in Chile.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't
realise
that.
Strangely enough, none of them were old.
The old Christians are like a proper team now. They were an amateur team at this time, but now they're one of Uruguay's most successful rugby teams.
Yeah. You could argue this was the catalyst.
You're just exposing your inadequate knowledge of the sport of rugby union there, Christopher.
Why?
Because all teams were amateur up until about the mid-90s, and then the game turned professional on a global scale.
I just said they were an amateur team, and now they're one of the biggest rugby teams in Uruguay.
No, you didn't say that.
So you've just readjusted my words to fit your agenda.
No, downputting. No.
Yes, you have.
No.
Don't you put him down, hon.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
No, he's not worth it.
It's not worth it, is he?
Not worth it.
Ignore him, hon. Oh. Go and get yourself a sex on beach and block him out.
Wait till I get home. You're getting the fucking back of the hand.
Back of the hand. Is that on Facebook or is that in real life?
That's real life, that.
The virtual backhand.
Yeah, you can be as strong as you want on the internet. Wait till I get home.
You will be getting... It won't be a virtual port you get.
So, yeah, we've got the 45 passengers and the Uruguayan rugby team, who were the more notable passengers. Some of their family members joined them for this trip across.
Yeah, because they couldn't fill the plane with just the players, so they had spare seats. Because it was just a flight for the rugby team.
Yeah.
So they had spare seats, so they said, oh, bring your
family
mum and dad
friend.
Along. Bring
there
your
was also
brothers and sisters.
Family and friends.
Yeah. Fancy a free flight?
Yeah, across the Andes.
Across the Andes.
And the pilot was called...
Where are the Andes?
The Andes is somewhere close to Argentina.
No, the end of the armies.
Oh my god.
I had to get that in before Chris.
Bastard, I had that written down for that.
So, the pilot's name, I can't quite. I might be pronouncing it incorrectly, but I think.
I imagine there's going to be a lot of fucking mispronunciations today.
Yeah. So, I'd say the pilot is either called Julio or Julio, but I'm going with Julio.
I go for Julio.
Julio!
So, his name is Julio Cesar Ferradas. And he was actually flying. He was a really experienced pilot. He'd flown across the Andes umpteen times, a lot of flying hours under his belt. He even had someone that he was training on the flight with him, Colonel Dante Hector Iguara.
Oh, that was well so, done.
Yeah, I was calling him La Gaga.
So, well, I might be wrong, you might be wrong. No. So he had a trainee pilot on there as well, so that's how much faith, you know, the airline put in. They were due to fly on the 12th of October and they didn't. Purely because the weather was really bad.
I find it a bit mad, really. You know, you're between Argentina and Chile, aren't you? Where it's proper hot.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Andes in the middle.
That's just bastard freezing.
Bastard freezing.
Yeah, it's like an angry spot, but cold.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a cold sore.
Yes.
Yes.
Like a cold, very good.
A very cold sore.
Like a very,
in the
very
middle
cold
of two
sore.
Hot rocks.
Ooh. Crikey.
It's like herpes, basically.
So, with that in mind, obviously the weather was really bad on the 12th, so they didn't fly. It was a fully loaded flight now. They've got bums on seats. You know, it was a fully loaded flight, so it was essential that the pilot would have planned this route to the hilt. But I find it funny that it actually flew on Friday the 13th of October.
Oh.
Which is unlucky for some.
I did wonder when I saw 13th of October. Yeah. I couldn't be bothered doing the maths to figure out what day it was.
So, I mean, you can argue that the pilot was a little bit too hasty here because the weather hadn't settled down at all.
Why? Because it was Friday the 13th, so he shouldn't have set off.
I wouldn't have set off at all, basically. But, you know, each to their own, fair folks to it.
Some airlines don't have a 13th row, do they? On the planes. They have the superstition. They don't have a 13th
really?
Row.
Really?
Like, they number down the cabin one and then it goes 12 to 14.
Oh, right, okay. No, I did not know that.
Superstitious bastards. Get on with it.
A bit too much that, innit? Yeah,
they don't fly under ladders either. Dickheads.
God's ladders.
Bit harsh. They're only trying to be nice.
So the weather was still quite precarious on Friday the 13th, but good old Caesar.
That's the weather.
That's a...
Painting a picture.
Thanks for that.
Ferrados still made the decision that, yeah, the weather's actually set to get better. The forecast was quite good for the afternoon, right. So we thought, you know what? Balls to it. We're going.
Fuck it, we're going.
Yeah, we're going. We need to get there. We're
in
not missing
a penny, in for a penny.
Exactly.
Get your duty free, lads. Jump on. We're off.
Come on, strap in. Strap in for the ride. So they took off on that Friday at 2:18 p.m. promptly.
I'm leaving on a jet plane. I don't know where I'll be back again.
Oh, fucking.
And off they go.
So according to records, they were flying quite nicely for a while. Everything was going smoothly. Drinks trolley were going down.
Yeah, hold on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lovely.
Were drink mirrors on.
Yeah, yeah. They were all getting pissed up and tanked up ahead of the rugby match.
In-flight movie run.
Yeah, they had everything. Jaws 2.
They like a drink, rugby lads, don't they?
Yeah, they love
it.
They
do, or they'd have been like... They'd have been playing like shoe on your head games and stuff like that. I don't know what they do. Spell out Matilda.
They're usually getting the cocks out after the first
drink. Yeah, dipping it in.
Dipping it in drinks and then sucking each other off.
Sticky biscuit in toilets.
Having a game of cock or balls.
Yeah.
Cock or no cock.
Yeah. They all had blue washed denim jeans on. Brown shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and black shirts.
Oh, what's them like?
Tucked in.
Yeah,
them
tucked,
shirts. Tucked in.
Like, what are they like? Enley or like? Them boating shirts.
Yeah. And a couple of them, even though they were in Uruguay, these lads were... I mean, you often think the twats, right? But the lads with the pullovers...
Pull over. Nicely.
Yeah, well, who'd be laughing later on when they had a, when they had a jumper with them?
And sunglasses as well, most of the time.
Yeah.
Think it glare on snow.
Yeah.
They're integral.
So, we're not in snow yet, are we?
No, but there's snow all around.
Yeah.
Through the plane windows. The 571 aircraft was arguably quite modern, but according to records, it was quite underpowered and it probably didn't have the minerals for the flight that it was about to take in the weather conditions.
It were a propeller job, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah, like little ones.
And it had a nickname amongst the pilot fraternity.
What is it? The mountain dodger.
No, the lead sled.
The lead sled.
Oh, God.
Must fill you full of confidence.
I know, yeah. Don't tell the passengers. Jesus Christ. Stewardess, stick your arm out and flap. Come on.
So we said, essentially, we're saying they were in a crap plane, basically. They were in a tin can of a plane. And really, it should have been far more well-equipped for the job to fly over the Andes, which was quite unpredictable weather anyway, even if the forecast was quite good. Mm. So, according to... there was cloud cover, so they were going through clouds, which can cause quite bad turbulence anyway, can't it?
Yeah.
But apparently they were flying through like a weather state called instrument meteorological conditions.
Ooh.
I don't really know what that is, but all I can gather from that is that it's just when clouds get in the engine and make it really,
I think
really
you can't
get clouds in the engine.
Clouds are made out of candy floss.
Oh. Yeah, of course you can.
Sticks everything together.
Pull over. A bloody Kerber sat on top of water again.
Propellers stop turning with all sticky sugar.
That's why planes crashing.
Yeah.
What's going on? We've got a bloody cloud stuck in propellers again.
Oh.
No, he's thinking it though. It is. It's
thick
true.
Clouds.
It's water vapour.
It's water vapour that can essentially really damage a plane's engine if they get enough of it.
I think what it was is the visibility was that bad. They were flying only from their instruments.
Yeah.
They couldn't see anything.
They couldn't actually see.
Were a band on plane?
Yes, there was.
Shania Twain again, go! Get that drinks trolley back up here.
Flying without wings.
No, don't do that one! Don't do that one!
Oh, gosh. So, with this in mind, it was poor visibility. Like, a lot of people report state that the pilot incorrectly estimated his position while he was flying over the Andes.
Oh, because he'd give the wrong position when he was doing his checking.
He was literally relying on radio navigation rather than a lot of visuals because the cloud was like that thick. You couldn't really see that. Basically, you couldn't see your hand in front of you. And they were flying through this thick mass of cloud.
You couldn't see the Andes in front of you.
At the end of the Andes.
I couldn't see the Andes. So, yeah, it was this stage they passed through an area called Plancham Pass, which was obviously an area in the Andes, and it was about 60 to 70 kilometres away from Curica.
Plancham Pass sounds like it's got a nice tea room.
Plancham Pass.
<Yeah. laughs>
So like it's like in Leeds.
Yeah, like a nice bistro.
You can get caught.
In a pub.
Get a scone and a cup of tea.
Yeah, there'll be a bloke in there having a pint with pork scratchings in front of log fire.
So it was at this time they actually went radio back to the radio control centre and said, we're going to be landing at Creeco in around 1 minute's time.
We're going to be arriving at Creeco in about an hour's time.
And that they were going to be passing this area and turning north to head towards this Creeco area.
Mm-hmm.
Alas, the issue arose when they actually turned north far earlier than they should have done.
Oh.
In which case...
I said third left, you dickhead, you went on first one!
As well as this, he was as well as turning far too early, he turned at 0.014 degrees.
Oh, he got his bearings wrong.
They royally ballsed it up.
Ballsed it up.
So as they were descending at this stage, the plane hit severe turbulence. And it was at this stage, they actually tossed the aircraft up and down. So literally, you can imagine how frightening that would be if you've experienced turbulence.
So he's bouncing up and down.
Drinks trolleys all over, like, sure.
Drinks, yeah. There's bloody gin falling over.
Lemons
rolling down.
Lemon
aisle.
Yeah.
Lemons rolling down. Boxes of fags falling out of top,
yeah.
Over
you could get, a fag burn, couldn't you? Off a stray one.
You could smoke on flights.
Yeah.
Reportedly, the downdraft was that bad. The plane just suddenly dropped hundreds of feet through the clouds.
Some of the lads on the plane were like joking, like saying, "Oh,
yeah, what you do at first? It's all
lads." And then one of them apparently looked out the window and could literally see the rock face,
and was so close to the mountain, that it was like shocking.
Shit.
So shit a brick.
It was reported that, obviously, he turned north too soon. They were going through the mountains. They were basically up Shit Creek at this point, but obviously the pilot's not going to say as much.
Just a quick announcement. We've passed by... We've just gone through... What's it called?
They've just
Plonium Pass or...
Pancho Pass.
Planchon Pass.
We're just making our way over Pancho's Pass and now heading down to Shit Creek.
So obviously at this stage as well, the plane, in order to climb back up, because it had dropped several hundred feet, was almost vertical. And it's at this stage that the alarm started to sound on the plane.
All right, so it's just just dropped all at once,
dropped,
and now it's going
to
get itself back up again.
To try and get
again.
Back up to
Yeah, because there's the reports, isn't there, from the cockpit. More power, we need more power,
And if you remember back, they need to be at a certain height in the Andes, and they were nowhere near that at this stage because they dropped so low.
Shit,
the plane was like vertical, going up the side of a mountain. Can you imagine what that looked like from afar?
That's what it sounded like.
I can imagine, that's very good.
Having read this as well, witness accounts at the time and evidence at the scene indicate the plane struck the mountain either two or three times in an attempt to gain altitude. They put that much power in it, so obviously his foot were really on gas at this stage.
Pedal to the metal.
Literally, pedal to the floor. The pilot was able to bring the aircraft...
I hope he had his driving shoes on.
I hope he has his driving gloves on.
Yeah.
I hope he had a wide bore exhaust fitted to his plane.
You've had go faster stripes in a minute, eh?
So he obviously struck the mountain two or three times at this stage in order to... They put that much power into to get it up the side of the mountain. So the pilot was actually able to bring the nose over the ridge, the nose of the aircraft over the ridge. Put a bit of context with that. But the lower part of the tail cone may have clipped the ridge at the back, so that bit fell backwards. So it basically split in two, from what I can gather.
Hold on, what's split in two here now?
The plane.
The plane,
so
literally.
Tail's
so the
off.
The tail was literally gone, and then the front...
Right, so they've hit it now.
It's like it's going vertical, and it's just going to get over the top of the ridge of the mountain.
Oh, gutted.
And it clips it, and the back bit comes off.
The back bit goes shooting off somewhere.
So there's a bit of a problem there, then, isn't there?
There's a bit of a...
Back end's missing.
Back end missing, so... Imagine that, you're going to bloody coming back for a drink with your wife, and she's gone.
Hey, you're in bog at front.
I know,
Squirt it shit out. Fucking back at play.
I know, Where's my wife? Thankful for that.
Yeah, but he had that T-shirt on. He had a T-shirt on. If you can read this, the wives fell off.
The next collision severed the right wing of the propeller.
So the fascists have gone.
The right wings have gone, basically, Well done, you.
Very good. I'll give you that one.
I think in the process of this, but a lot of the passengers were actually just sucked out of the rear of the plane.
With the force of the gravity. There was two cabin crew gone.
Yeah.
And three passengers.
Oh, dear.
So
they're still bouncing about here, and there's five of them been sucked off.
The vast majority of them. Stop it.
I was waiting for that.
And it sounds like the
vast. Just saying.
The impact against the snowbank crushed the cockpit when it actually made impact with the side of the mountain. So, obviously, at this stage, we could say that the plane's crashed. That's quite the disaster.
I read that then it basically turns into a bobsled.
Yeah.
Shooting down the mountain.
Yeah.
It goes over 1,000 feet down the side of a mountain, just like a sled.
Yeah.
Like a lead sled.
Like a lead sled. Yes. Yeah.
Living up to its name.
They say when it finally comes to a halt at the bottom, literally all the chairs are just ripped. It comes at such an impact that all the chairs are just ripped from the stanchions that they're held down to, and all the chairs fly to the front of the plane.
Yeah, and that fucks a lot of people up, that.
Yeah, I think...
They all get broken bones and that.
Yeah, surprisingly, it's probably that causes more damage than the actual crash itself.
Yeah, and they say that most of the people that were injured, obviously we'll come to this later, but a lot of the people with broken bones, ruptures of ligaments and all sorts, they were the ones that ultimately died because they had no way sort of
medical attention.
There was no medical attention, was there? So the planes come down at this stage, obviously. Pilot Ferradas... You know, the main guy, he died instantly.
Yeah, he died on impact.
When the nose gear compressed the instrument panel against his chest within the cockpit.
Yeah, because I read a lot of the lads that had survived the rugby team, like they were putting their hopes on, you know, getting to the cockpit and seeing the pilot, and he's going to be able to radio through
and we've
survived it, but literally the whole cockpit is just
crunched.
I think it got to the stage as well where
the backup batteries like just crushed and obliterated.
So at this stage we've got 33 that are still alive. They're obviously struggling around. They don't know what to do. It's freezing. The plane's in half. A lot of people.
The thing you've got to remember is, obviously, you know, it is freezing. But these lads are going from Uruguay to Chile, where it's pretty hot both ends.
Yeah.
So these lads are rocking around in snow in sombreros and flip-flops. They're not dressed for the occasion, are they?
Not one little bit, no. Not one little bit. So at this stage, we've got some medical students that are on board that aren't...
Lucky.
Which is lucky, isn't it, really? Yeah. There's always a doctor knocking about. There's always a doctor knocking
loitering.
About. Loitering in the background with a scalpel. So the two medical students, and they acted quickly to assess the severity of people's wounds. So
thinking. What time did they crash?
It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
All right, so still got a bit of daylight.
Yeah, it was about 3:15 in the afternoon. So yeah, it was still quite light, but obviously I can imagine, like, I think night's probably drawing a lot quicker,
don't
it?
It's going to be carnage though, isn't it? I mean, there's going to be people everywhere, broken legs.
Yeah.
There's a fellow in a coma. There's a fellow with bits of metal sticking in him.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a terrible scene.
Yeah, there's people, like, there was people with broken legs, there was people with bits of metal sticking in them.
Yeah, boxes of fags everywhere.
Yeah, lemons everywhere, someone had a bad eye, you know. It was really,
the thing is,
it was
well,
shite step at
you've
first.
Got to think, they're getting everybody prepared that's injured, sorting everybody out.
Yeah.
But I think they probably fully believe that a rescue party is going to be there within hours, probably.
Within a good amount of time.
Well, they do, and do you know why? Because, you know, fucking knobhead trainee.
Yeah.
He says to some of the survivors, he says, like, before he dies, he says, "Don't worry, I've radioed in our position."
Yeah, but he got the position wrong.
But he's got the position totally wrong. So all them survivors,
that's
are living in false hope.
Yeah.
He's told them that they're 70 kilometres.
Yeah.
Further away than where they've actually crashed. Yeah.
Blue fat lad at back eating all crisps out.
Yeah, because he said they'd be a minute away.
They didn't think they'd need them, did they? Don't worry about rations. Bloody rescue party's on its way. Get stuck in. Chill that chocolate orange over here.
Always a chocolate orange, isn't there? I think it's
Toblerone.
Old Norbert into a Toblerone. Dark white and milk chocolate, all of them.
Oh,
that's good duty free tackle, that though, isn't it? Really good duty free tackle. Loads of jelly beans as well.
Yeah, you using all batteries up on CD player, mini CD.
So, with that in mind, obviously it's carnage, and none of the passengers with compound fractures actually survived. So, you know, it's a horrible scene for the people that have survived to see.
It is, it must be weird how it's all happened. It's like that massive adrenaline moment, and then suddenly after like maybe an hour or something, then the calm, like the quiet sort of sets in.
And then you start thinking, it would be quiet there.
And you start, well, what the fuck do we do now?
Yeah.
So at this stage, the Chilean Air Search and Rescue Services were out. They were notified within the hour of the plane going down.
That's the thing, when the night sets in.
That's when you can imagine.
Because that's when the temperature's going to drop.
Yeah, it doesn't just drop, it fucking
plummets.
Quite literally. It was about 6 o'clock that evening that the Uruguayan media was notified, and it was all over the papers.
Seven die overnight. Just with a cold. And
do you know how cold it goes?
Go on.
-30.
-30?
That's -30.
And again, these lads are in shorts and T-shirt. -30, Jesus. They get all the luggage, don't they? And track, because you can imagine, they're all in the plane, but this plane's got a big gaping hole at the back of it. And they get all the luggage and pile it up, and then huddle together.
Try and make a bit of a wall to insulate it all.
And then I read that they took all the, like, the sleeving off the seat covers
and to
use
try and
them
get
as
they were actually quite resourceful, weren't they, when it came to the plane? There was like quite a lot of
they did.
I tell you what, I'd
they
enjoy.
Made the best of a bad situation. I think
I mean, I'm not saying I'd enjoy being in the situation, but you know, it was going to bring a bit of something that I would enjoy within it. It'd be rooting through people's luggage.
Oh god, yeah.
Oh, you'd have a field day,
wouldn't you,
wearing our knickers.
Right, so we need to put on as many layers of clothes as we can.
Yeah.
Give it them sussies. Here we go.
Get me that two-piece.
Yeah. Right, we can have 3 cases each. Right, and you've just got to put on whatever in there. Poor Derek. I have five bathing suits on. All right.
Crotchless knickers, fucking gutted.
Who needs bloody suspenders in Chile? Good God, you've opened a can of worms here, Dave. Didn't know you were a cross-dresser. Anyway, on the second day, 11 aircraft from Argentina, Chile, Uruguay, they searched for the down flight. The search area included their location, and a few aircraft flew near the crash site, but they couldn't see it. The issue was, because it was covered in salt, they couldn't see it. They were literally circling and they couldn't see it.
What colour do you... Do you paint a fucking plane that flies over snowy mountains?
White.
White.
Obviously white.
Fucking
yeah.
dickheads.
Yeah.
Paint it red.
Paint, literally, paint, yeah. Do something like
all a... planes that go over snowy mountains, paint yeah. red from so, now on.
It's a good idea.
It is, yeah. The survivors reportedly tried to use lipstick to write SOS.
Did they?
On the side of the plane, yeah, which again is quite resourceful.
Right. They're like, true love always.
Oh, yeah. I love you, IDST. So they tried to write SOS on the side of this plane.
Yeah, a lot of bloody lipstick.
Well, that's what I thought, because you'd have to use how much lipstick has Dave got?
No! You know, you have to be like big dauber letters.
Yeah, they would. You can imagine how disheartening that would be, though, if you saw if you saw these aircrafts circling.
Oh, yeah.
Going like, hey, come on.
I'm here!
I'm here! Find me, I'm here.
You see that a lot in, like, when people have shipwrecked or divers have got left behind. From diving parties, and you can see their ships, but because you're just a speck in the ocean, yeah. they can't see
can't
you,
do anything
yeah.
about
and
it.
You're just fucked.
Horrendous. So the search efforts were actually cancelled after 8 days. So they had 8 days of trying.
I've got a list here of the food that they had on the plane.
Yeah.
3 bottles of wine, because we can imagine they've been out here 8 days now, but they had 3 bottles of wine, 3 bottles of liquor, 13 chocolate bars, probably Toblerones, and a bit of dry fruit.
That one guy survived off 1 chocolate-covered peanut over 3 days.
Oh, would you nibble at it or just get it all
or
in
suck
your
it.
Once?
Just suck it a little bit every day. Oh, no, but they don't go small, do they?
No.
Well, they might do.
Just eat the fucker. Might as well enjoy it.
Well, apparently the 13 chocolate bars, I mean, they were probably a bit bigger in the 70s, don't they? Because
they had no sugar tax then.
Did they? You know, chocolate bars have gone a lot
bigger
smaller.
In 70s.
If they've had a 70s tin of roses, they'd have been all right for months.
They would have been salty.
But they had one square each per day.
But you think it's the worst of both situations, because when you're in freezing cold weather, your body's working overload to
like
try and generate heat.
You're burning so many calories,
so you're burning,
aren't you?
Like 3 times as many calories, and you're eating hardly anything. So it's a...
They're all right for water, though, weren't they? Because you can eat snow.
They rigged up a system.
They had a system, you see, for
which
this.
Which melted it and collected it.
They were very, very
why did you need to do that? Why can you not just
because
snow,
if you eat the
snow,
it lowers your body temperature even further, so it makes you go hypothermia.
They needed to melt it.
So you melt it so it's like...
So it's taking less calories
to consume.
Mm. See, I'd be fucked.
I wouldn't know any of this. But
I'd have just been sucking on a snowball and then I'd be found stiff in the morning.
Don't eat any yellow snow, whatever
you
do.
No change there.
And there's one fella who, I'm not sure how he got on this plane, amidst the weirdos and the Nandos.
Go on, give us a list.
Well, I'm not giving you the list of everyone, but I've given you a few first names there, haven't I? The Gustavos and the Juan, Joaquin, Ramon... And Roy Hartley.
Roy Hartley.
Roy Hartley from Yorkshire.
He had a suitcase full of duty free fags.
He did.
I'm telling you now.
He did a fag run.
he weren't even into rugby.
Yeah.
He was from Bradford on a fag run.
Yeah, he was. He was from Bradford, weren't he? Roy Hartley, good lad.
Set off from Leeds, Bradford.
Ends up in Andy.
He just got lost.
And earned about a free flight to Chile before he could double up on his fagging tick. bought an empty suitcase.
I bet when that plane went down, I bet he was tanning binds. I've been gasping since Bradford. Fuck you lot.
200 Benson and Edges, 1 peso. Get in.
Took us a bottle of teachers in there and all.
No, yeah, give us one of them wines, love. Any ice?
They'll fucking fly on estate, these.
Fiver a pack. But he actually improvised. Roy, actually, credit where credit's due. He might be from Yorkshire, but he improvised and he used a very long antenna to make this radio more effective.
Did he now?
He did. So then they could hear what was going on.
What was going on in the world?
They could, but yeah, it was like a transistor radio, so they could only listen. They couldn't get a message.
Yes.
Couldn't get a message out.
And it's people started to look up to Roy a little bit at this stage because they all clustered around him hearing the news that, you know, they'd stopped, they got this transmission through that they'd stopped the search So obviously all the passengers and survivors are thinking, Christ, we're actually done for here.
Yeah, we're fucked.
So they're all clustered around
Rye
thinking...
Yeah, I suppose once you're hearing their messages that nobody's coming, it's like, right, well, what do we do now?
Well, it changes the game, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because up until that point, you're thinking someone's going to rescue
us.
Yeah.
But going back to our earlier reference to inspirational quotes, live, laugh, love, etc., etc., there was one rugby player, Gustavo Coco Nikolic, who at this stage, hearing the news that they'd stopped this search, he climbed out of the aircraft and seeing the faces obviously knew that
because everyone's gutted, aren't they?
He's thinking, right, do you know what? I'm going to take the bull by the horns here.
Oh, hell.
And he went, hey, boys, there's some good news. And they were saying, hey, can you call this good news?
Yeah.
You know,
we've just found out we're fucked.
We've literally just found out no one's coming for us. And then they all just said, we've just heard on the radio, and, you know, there was hopelessness in the predicament in this moment. He said, because it means that we actually have to get out of here on our own. So he proclaimed, you know, we're going to do it on our own. We don't need the help of the authorities. We can get out this. And I think that
we
actually...
do this!
Yeah, I think that actually invoked some
Let's
hope.
It. It's taking... They've took control of the destiny.
So, I mean, at this stage, we've got the first week that's nearly on the horizon. And five more people died in that time.
It's just like some people are getting gangrene and stuff, you know, from their injuries.
Related to their injuries.
And I think it's with the impact, it's those people
and
that are
some
suffering
people
the most.
Are dying from exposure and hypothermia.
It is very grisly imagining the scene, but obviously going back, we'll call him Coco, who, you know, professed, we are going to get out here, it's going to be on our
Go
lives.
On, lad!
Go on, you can do it. They actually improvised massively, didn't they, with the materials that they had to get through it.
It would be like an episode of the fucking A-Team.
It was I honestly read through this and I was completely nonplussed.
It was like fucking B.A. Baracus.
B.A. Baracus would have been pissed off if he woke up on that plane.
It was like...
He'd going on no plea.
It was literally like Blue Peter gone wild.
Heart attack.
Get John Noakes in here.
Honest to God... So, as an example, they used the broken seats and other debris from the aircraft and fashioned a crude shelter.
A crude so, one?
Like,
well, in the shape of an ass.
Yeah. This is where you went and watched your blueies.
They just like added two testicles into the plane.
They had them stick on dillies everywhere.
Really like a massive cock and ball from the sky.
Well, you've got to keep yourself entertained.
Well, you have, haven't you?
Like, what are lads just making two balls in suitcases at the end of the plane? Like, hey lads, come and look at this.
Look what I've done.
Standing up on mountain. Looks like a cock.
Who doesn't love a good cock picture? I still draw them now.
I do.
It gets me through the working day.
An ejaculating penis gets me through the day, be it drawn or not. But you know, they managed to cram the 27 survivors into this space, you know, inside the broken fuselage in a 2.5 by 3 metre space. So that's quite impressive, I think.
Well, I think it keeps them warm, doesn't it? You know, if you're all huddled in together.
Like penguins.
Yeah, and as we said, they all use the luggage to keep warm.
Yeah.
You know.
Well...
Had about 6 2 pieces on a piece.
When you say that, all I can think is like they cut like four holes into a suitcase. That's
wearing
it.
All wearing
suitcases.
There was one chap on the flight. He was called Fito Strotch, and he was quite the inventor, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Oh,
he was quite
Fito Strotch, the inventor.
He was quite the inventor.
Made a 2-piece suite out of an outback suitcase.
He even made a blue
turtle
room.
Shell.
It was.
Should have seen him, two trunkies for boots.
My favourite one here is they even improvised sunglasses.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously.
Well, you want to look cool, don't you?
You want to look. They improvised sunglasses.
Yeah. Who's the rock star of the group, that would be me?
Using the sun visors in the pilot's cabin, wire, and a brass trap. To make sunglasses. And they removed the seat covers, which were partially made of wool, and they used them to keep warm. So, you know, they
I
did.
I saw that the. They used the women's makeup and just covered himself in it for sunscreen. Because obviously the sun was...
Yeah.
They were all getting sunburnt, so they were all just covered in makeup, like lippy, a bit of blusher.
Handmade sunglasses.
Yeah, I bet it looked like some out of bloody Mad Max.
Yeah.
One flew over the cuckoo's head.
If you were in that terrible situation, you'd proper go for it, wouldn't you? You'd like be like two big red eyes with lippy. Yeah. And then like black stuff all over your lips. You know, like, make yourself look proper mad.
There was a bloke though came past with a snowmobile, but he were
freaked out.
he were a bit reserved and
one at a hotel porter. Yeah. From
you just place. Seen them all, he said, bloody hell, there's a lot of trannies up on up mounted, I weren't sticking around up there.
Bloody cross dressers.
Bloody snow clowns.
So it was at this stage, obviously, the food that they had really limited amount of food, as you mentioned. And, you know, between 27 of them, it wouldn't go that far eventually. So one of the main bits of this story really does come down to what they do next and how they satiate their ever-growing hunger.
Yeah. Well, they're getting a bit hungry now, aren't they?
They're getting very hungry.
They're getting a bit hungry. And it's getting to the point where people, you know, passing out with starvation, you know, they haven't got the energy to carry on. No. And then one of them jokes about we should eat the pilot.
Yeah, it's a bit of a joke, but then, you know.
One of the lad who speaks to is like, you're mad, you're insane. And then he tells.
Because don't forget the religious
of the other
as well.
Lads, yeah, the strict Catholics. And he tells one of the other groups, you know, as they were chatting, Joseph, or whatever he's called, has said,
Let's eat the pilot.
And he's mad. At which point, this lad responded with, well, yeah, we've been talking about it too.
And before, just to give her the context, before they ate the people,
some big arguments.
They even ate, like, the insides of the seats.
Yes. Yeah. But that was making
leather, and that just made him really...
A suitcase. Like, someone had a suitcase.
Yeah.
They did.
I think
I'm not
the
joking.
Stuff that,
not
that,
full. Not a whole one. You could eat a whole one, could you? You'd have
not
start,
in one city.
You'd have to start with name tag. A little leather name tag. That
a lot
you got
of chewing.
It. Yeah.
But I think the stuff that... Obviously, there was stuff that treated the leather on the seats and stuff that really...
Well, it
made
is. It's
someone
like
really
that anti-inflammatory
poorly,
stuff. Yeah.
And it made them really sick. So, like, you know, there's only so far eating sponge and foam's going to get you.
Well, yeah.
And it certainly wasn't going
to... I used to go in this pub in Charlie, and in pool room, all... You know, like, they have bench seats round.
Yeah.
And all of them, they'd all been slit open with Stanley knives. And you know that foam stuff from inside?
Yeah.
They had all been pulled out, and they had all local nutters had rolled it and smoked it. And you just get a cheap eye.
What? No way.
Yeah.
Are you joking?
No, smoking, I'm deadly serious.
What, smoking foam out of a chair?
Yeah. I swear my life.
When we're trying it?
Well, get it out.
Well, come on.
Who's got some foam?
I don't know if it has to be specifically like pub bench sheet stuffing.
Oh, yeah, I'll only smoke pub foam.
Yeah. I don't think you can just get it out of your armchair.
Yeah, no, we're going high class. Get that Chesterfield over here.
So obviously then when eating, jokes aside, when eating like parts of the chairs and stuff from the plane, you know, it's obviously not going to work. It's making them pop. They do turn to actually eating.
Well, there's a massive...
Some of the passengers.
There's a massive conflict going on, isn't there?
Oh, God, yeah.
As you can imagine, because they're really devout Catholic, some of them, the majority of them. And there's also the morality. You've got to think as well, like, some of these people, like, it's the mates that have died. There's people that are on a rugby team.
Well, you'd start off with pilot, wouldn't you?
Yeah,
like,
with people...
Through staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would,
then
wouldn't
host
you?
Is next.
Before eating Auntie June.
I don't know, though. Pie's a pie when you're hungry. They've been there for a while already. I wouldn't
have a problem with it.
If I had to.
No, if you had to, then you would.
Because what they did as well is they dried the bodies out in the sun, so it wouldn't be like eating cold, lank flesh. It'd be dry. Be like eating a pepperami. That's the effect.
like a piece of jerky.
Yeah, like beef jerky.
Well, I read the
people jerky.
People jerky.
Try new people jerky. Yeah.
They take the slivers. Wouldn't they?
Yeah.
They'd put them in the sun so that they'd dry out.
Yeah.
And then they'd set fires burning wood and money.
They started off like with matchstick sized
little pieces.
Slivers.
Yeah. Before they knew it, they were on porterhouse.
And some people couldn't stomach that. They were eating that raw.
Right.
And some of the survivors, they couldn't stomach it. Like one woman, she starves to death in the end because she can't keep it down. She tries.
It's the idea of it more than anything, I think.
She can't keep it down, but then they do make it easier by, they think, to start like cutting it and drying it out.
Yeah. Which is making it a lot easier to eat.
Which then makes it more palatable to eat.
I think one of the justifications is when they're discussing it and there's conflicts of whether they should, whether it was morally correct. Like you said, they're very religious. I think one of them stands up and says, listen, what if I die? Then I want you to take my body to keep you alive and to keep you to survive. And then it's God's will for them to survive.
And I think that giving them that faith because they were so religious kind of justified it
a bit
more.
Well, they do, because I think it's really... The people who are still alive, they in the end, they make a pact, don't they?
Yeah.
And they say, right, if any of us, of these, you know, 20
if I die,
others, if I die, you can eat me. And another one says, well, if you look at the Bible, Jesus like says, this is my body, this is my blood. You know what they said? He likens it to that.
The way that I see it is it's just like another animal. And once you're dead, you're dead.
Well, everything's dead.
You leave your body behind. In my view, anyway.
No, I think I would. If you're not a very religious person, then I would take a similar view. Is well, once you're dead, it's very sad, but your body's useless.
You've got it. Yeah, you might as well give it back to the earth.
And if you're starving, then what is a better way to help your friends than to keep them going?
Yeah. Which bit would you eat first?
Well, a human like a cow, innit? You want the muscle that doesn't move the most. That'll be the most tender.
Yeah.
So, big-ass cheeks. Because humans don't have, like, meaty backs, do they?
So you want a Kardashian?
You want a big old butt. You know, you don't want silicone.
And yeah, that would poison you.
You might as well go back and eat that suitcase.
Get back jumping on that chair, love.
Yeah, I think it's going to be arse and legs, isn't it? Yeah. And then biceps, triceps.
Christ, it sounds like your
pectorals.
Fantasy. Sounds like your fantasy, this. Don't know about your palatable.
Don't get me started on the offal.
He stood atop a plane having a meat market.
It's funny you mention offal, because obviously initially they were revolted by the idea of eating each other.
Yeah.
And eating the skin. It started off like matchstick-sized pieces of skin, bits of flesh, muscle. Then eventually, obviously... As they got more hungry, well,
as they got a bit more comfy,
they got a bit more comfy.
It's seasoning.
Yeah.
We've already gone through 10 bodies. Fucking hell.
We're on day 2.
The supply of flesh was obviously diminishing as well.
Oh, you can eat buffet.
They were eating things, you know, they were eating hearts, lungs, brains eventually.
Brains?
Yeah. Because they knew without rescue the time was limited. And
I didn't realise it got that
far.
Yeah.
It wasn't just skin, they literally ate nearly everything. Well, they needed it to survive, and obviously the rationale behind it was, you know, it's all right. God will okay this because a lot of people have given.
You see, that's different now.
Oh, have we upset your sensibilities?
Yeah, I was just like, you know what? I could chew on an ass, you know, a bit of rump.
It's different when you're eating someone else's heart.
But like when we're getting into hearts and brains and all that stuff, that's a bit.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, well, I think it just illustrates how desperate they must have been.
Yeah.
Because to eat another human being's brain, where all the thoughts and the personality is, I mean, that's a big step, isn't it?
It's a massive.
I'm not bothered about
step.
That. I just don't really fancy eating a brain of anything.
It's a massive moral step.
Have you ever eaten brain?
Well, I'm sure I have, like, of a fish or something.
No, I mean, like, proper brain, like a quivering brain.
No.
I have. I've got all the confessions today, haven't I?
What kind of brain did you eat?
Cow brain.
A cow?
Do you know what? I knew you were going to say a cow.
How did they present it? Like a blancmange?
I'm not joking.
Like a trifle?
Was it tasty?
Oh, it was weird. It was really weird texture.
I can imagine.
It was in France. It was quite firm, but then when you ate it, it was like this weird, like soft jelly texture. God, it was horrible.
I can't believe it.
But I think I'd fucked up. I didn't do it on purpose. I was in a restaurant in France. I didn't speak a word of French. And I just looked down the menu and saw boeuf. Well, beef. That'll be right. And ended up with brains and chips. You're joking.
Brains and pommes frites.
So then I was like, oh, I'm going to fucking eat it now. I'm hungry.
Oh, gosh, I don't know if I could eat that. But then again, if you're starving, you'll do out, won't you?
Mm. Yeah, of course you will.
So,
dick's a dick if you're horny.
Well, there you go. So we mentioned, obviously, they've taken it quite far now. You know, they've taken it quite far. They've resorted to eating, you know, the dead passengers. Bearing in mind, it's the 29th of October now, so
17 days.
They've been
17 days.
They've been surviving, but disaster strikes and an avalanche hits.
Yeah, it's fucking up. That's unlucky, isn't it?
I mean, that
you survived a plane crash. You've eaten your mates, and now a bloody avalanche comes.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it takes 8 lives. So eight further people have died.
I mean, it's a real shitter because this avalanche comes and it hits the plane and it shoves it further down the mountain, but it buries it.
Literally
with all the people inside.
Yeah, with like some people inside. So they're screwed, basically. And one of the guys that had assumed leadership previous to this happened, Marcelo Perez, he was gone. He was one of the rugby players. He was gone. So now they were thinking, you know, we've lost our leader or someone that we were looking up
to. Yeah, because he was the captain of the rugby team. Yeah. So when they first crashed,
so natural,
he was like, he stepped up, you know, for a fuck's sake, lad.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit different playing a game of rugby to this situation.
Yeah.
But he'd been like keeping everyone going, keeping everyone together. But he gets killed.
Yeah, he gets killed in this avalanche.
So what we're down to now, 19.
So we've not got many of them left, really.
And they're all trapped as well. And they're thinking, fucking hell, what do we do? What do we do? We're going to suffocate.
Yeah.
There's a lad who we've not mentioned yet called Nando's. He'd been in a coma. Now, this lad is a fucking trooper.
Yeah, he was in a coma for 3 days initially, wasn't he?
After the initial crash, he's in a coma. Anyway, he wakes up from this coma. You know, he's got a fractured skull. No medical treatment or anything, but he gets up and, you know, starts getting about the camp, helping out. Nando's, he gets up, rips off this bit of luggage rail and manages to smash through the plane and up through the snow and creates an air vent. And then they're trapped in this cramped space for 3 days.
What, so they're buried for 3 days?
Yeah, a couple of them manage to dig out, like, but a lot of them can't get out, they're too injured. And they're trapped in this little cramped space with other people who died in the avalanche.
Yeah.
It's like a horrendous
situation. To find yourself,
at least you've got stacks to hand.
So they do resort to eating those people. But these are obviously people who were part of the pact.
Yeah. That said, if you want, you know, if I go.
If you need to eat me, eat me.
Yeah.
I think it becomes apparent as well when they do get out of this, you know, this bunker essentially, that okay, they can breathe and stuff and they're not suffocated, but I think it becomes quite apparent they need to
get out of
they
here.
Need to go over the mountain
to, need to
like,
do something.
They need to do something about this. So I think it becomes quite apparent they need to get over this mountain and search for help. At which point, you know, the co-pilot's dying statement had been they'd just passed Carrico, so there was quite a few things that the co-pilot had mentioned were maybe gave them ideas of where they were located, where they weren't located, but
he screwed them up, hadn't he? Because they were nowhere near where they said.
No.
Yeah, so shit's hit the fan. And they're going to have to get out of this place. And three lads, they step up. Say, right.
I'll do it.
We're going to do it. So, yeah, these lads, they're going to set off. So you've got Roberto Canessa. He's one of the medical students. He'd been helping everyone from the very beginning of the crash. And then you've got Nando Parado. He's a guy who'd been in a coma. He was the fella who got him out of the hatch. And then another fella by the name of Antonio Vizintin.
Vizintin?
Yes.
Vizintin.
They hatched this plan and they do a bit of preparation. So before they set off, the other survivors cut their rations even further. So they've got more rations to take with them. They make a big sleeping bag that they can all fit inside of.
Oh,
but these guys are under the impression that it's going to take them 3 days, really.
What, to walk?
To walk to civilization from the information given to them by the pilot.
Right.
So they set off with that in mind.
3 days. Three days. Boys.
Now, they decide to head west. There is some debate over should we go east or should we go west. But in the end, they decide to head west.
Yep.
So that's what they do. And the other survivors, they can see, because it's not, they're not just walking like west along a nice flat pavement. The other survivors can watch them for the next 3 days scaling a fucking mountain.
Yeah.
Now, none of these lads are mountain climbers.
Yeah.
They've not got on, you know, they've not been go outdoors.
They've got crampons on.
And got some nice new boots.
I think it's quite funny to note, though, Parado actually wore three pairs of jeans.
Well, there you go.
To embark on this.
That's like sledging cold.
And three proper, sweaters over a
proper
polo
rugby
shirt.
Players' jeans as well.
Yeah, but they have to go up this massive mountain ascent, and they've got no equipment, and they can see them, and they're like getting smaller and smaller, like ants.
Yeah.
And these guys are full of hope because they're thinking, we're going to climb up this mountain, we're going to get to the top, we're going to look over the top of this mountain, and we're going to see a valley, and we're going to see trees,
yeah,
and we're going to see
green,
civilization.
Nothing but
it's
green.
Going to be beautiful.
Hotel, sauna, spa,
drinks trolley.
So on the third day, I think it is the third day, they get to the top of this mountain and they like peep over the top. And what do they see?
Nothing but fucking mountains.
Mountains and mountains and mountains and snow and snow and snow and mountains, and just they're fucked and they are gutted. But they don't give up. So they have a bit of a, you know, let's have a bit of a chat, bit of a get together. And Antonio visiting, he says, all right, because one of the problems was finding someone to go back to the ship, to the, not the ship,
the ship,
to go back to the plane. I was thinking spaceship for some reason. Fuck knows. Welcome to my mind. But anyway, visiting, he says, yeah, all right, lads, I'll do it. And this is an amazing fact.
I love this, yeah.
Right. He sledges.
On a plane seat.
Back down the mountain, and it takes 1 hour. I mean, it's fucking mental.
Brilliant.
He takes 1 hour,
whereas... It must have been the ride of his life. I mean, come on.
Well, you think it took him 3 days to get to the top?
Yeah.
And yet 1 hour to get
back
down.
1 hour to get
down. Can you imagine him watching him come down hill?
What's this dickhead doing?
Who's that?
He's not at Rossendale Ski Slope.
Kissing his lucky egg.
Fucking hell. Madness. So the other two lads, they are obviously old Antonio whizzing down the mountain, and well, they've got a big walk ahead of them.
Yeah, they don't want to give up. They'd rather walk towards the death than the death come towards them.
Power on.
Yeah.
Now, they do get a bit of good luck as they're heading off on the journey to walk out. They do find some extra rations in the tail section of the plane. Oh. 3 meat patties.
Oh.
Some rum.
Oh, but that'll keep them going.
A few extra cloves and a little bit of medicine.
Oh, right.
So that, you know, that helps them on the way.
Yeah.
But it's still...
In Paris. I mean,
they're still in dire straits,
they're
aren't
still
they?
In, yeah. I mean, they've got...
At least they can get pissed if they won't walk, can't they?
So they walk for several more days at this stage. You know, they might have refueled, but they have a lot more
They're
walking.
Just trekking. I mean, it's proper
No
miserable.
Idea if they're going in the right direction or not.
So at this stage, they hike for several more days, obviously. They were able to reach the narrow valley that Prado had seen on top of the mountain. And at this stage, they found the source of Rio San Jose, which I believe is a river.
Ooh.
Which, obviously, you find a river.
Melty water.
Follow the river.
You'd like to think as well that probably potentially leads to civilization. So they followed this river and they reached the snow line. Gradually... There appeared more and more signs of human presence at this stage.
Fucking get it.
So
rappers,
can you imagine how happy
rappers and cans and stuff like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Some sign.
Instant barbecues.
Yeah.
Fucking all over it, sure.
Yeah.
So like there were some signs of camping. I think on the ninth day they even found some cows. You know, there was more and more.
Oh,
I know.
Get stuck into that.
When they rested that evening, they were real. Obviously, they were absolutely knackered. You can imagine how exhausted they were.
They're on death's door, though. I mean,
they literally. You can imagine how skinny they'll be. They'll be so undernourished. It'll be unbelievable.
They've dropped half the body weight.
Yeah, bottle of Captain Morgan on the game so far. Right?
I think even at this stage, I think Canessa even struggled to proceed any further. At this stage, he was that weak, that poorly, that undernourished. And at this stage, they saw some men on the other side of the river.
What? So how long have they been walking for at this point?
9 days at this point.
Nine days, solid walking.
And that's walking, being freezing, no food. Can you imagine the...
Up and down mountains
I mean, you burn a lot of energy up and down mountains anyway. Can you imagine that with no food?
Is there any data, like, on if they'd have walked in different direction?
If they'd have gone east, they would have found... a mountain pass quicker.
Right.
I think it was about 15 kilometres away to the east.
Yeah.
And because they went west, they had to
walk. 20, it was 20 kilometres.
A lot further.
Right. But they still made it.
But they made it.
It worked out at about a 15-mile trek in all before they found this person at the other side of the river, or about 20 kilometres. So that's a long way. So at this stage, Prado wrote a note and threw it across the river tied to a rock. So he said, I come from a plane that fell in the mountains. I am Uruguayan. We have been walking for 10 days. I have a wounded friend up there. In the plane, there are still 14 injured people. We have to get out from here quickly and don't know how. We don't have any food. We are weak. When are you going to come and fetch us? Please, we cannot even walk. Where are we? SOS. So this guy, you know, he basically... he answered the prayers. He read the note. He was riding by horseback.
He then rides 10 hours solid.
To help them, to bring them help.
It's not like they found this man on an horse and everything's all right. This man has to ride for 10 hours on horseback to get to the next tiny little place.
Like Hamlet almost.
What are the chances of them finding that man? Because, let's be honest, if he's gone 10 hours on a horse, it would have taken them 2 days to walk.
God, yeah, they would never have got out alive. That is, I suppose, you could class that chance meeting as maybe a miracle.
Yeah, Sergio Catalan really was the miracle, you know, because it was him that rode back, like you say.
The chance of him being there at that time, yeah, with the next civilised village being so far away, and who knows in what direction that village was. It could have been, they were going west, it could have been north from that point. I don't know.
Oh, God, yeah. But it's like, so he rides off on his horse, this fella, and eventually, after 10 hours, he manages to get word through another bloke on an horse. It's like, it's not easy, this. Well, and the second bloke on the horse, he then manages to go down a narrow mountain route that gets him to a holiday resort. And only when they get to this bloody holiday resort, then he stops someone who's driving a truck on the road and says, can you take me to the nearest police station? So they drive for ages to get to the nearest police station, and it's only then they actually get word to the authorities
that these are people have survived.
That these
and
people
been
are surviving. There's people.
And then they've
got to
get back.
And then they've got to get all the way back from. And it took, like, in the end, these two fellas, they walked in total about 37 miles.
Over 10 days? Bearing in mind they were that underfed. Now, I think to put it into perspective, though, the energy, Kinesra had lost 44 kilograms of weight. That was half of his body weight.
So they got him back, and then they had to get, was it helicopter out to?
Yeah,
imagine you're in that helicopter.
Three big helicopters.
Mm.
But again, the weather wasn't great. So the first helicopter went up on the first day, and it could only take half of the survivors from the crash site. The conditions were so bad, when the helicopter landed, it was only able to hover with one of its skids touching the mountain and the other one was in the air.
Yeah, because it might have knackered that up itself.
It couldn't land. You know, there was nowhere flat for it to land nearby.
Right, I see, yeah.
And they managed to take half of the survivors. So they took seven.
And come back for rest.
Well, I think what's really notable here is that some of the rescue men or women, they stayed in that plane. Because imagine being those seven people were told, well, actually,
you're
going to have to stay in this plane another day.
Yeah.
You mean you'd be frantic, wouldn't you?
You'd be heartbroken.
You?
Did they have to stay another night?
They had to stay another night.
Oh, fuck that. Can you imagine the arguing who's getting on that helicopter first?
Yeah. It's bad enough calling shotgun, innit?
I suppose they would have brought food and stuff, though.
Yeah, they did. And like I said, some of the people volunteered to stay with those injured people over for that last night, but still, your mind would be going like mad, wouldn't you? Are you thinking there's going to be another avalanche or, you know, I can't survive, I'm going to die.
But I read that they also had to explain themselves because there were body parts lying all over the shop.
Yeah, there was like some bodies were just perfectly preserved, others had been just eaten to the bone. But they called in a Catholic priest, didn't they?
Yeah, straight away. Because the doctor said to, what was the last thing you eaten?
They were saying, like, cheese, weren't they?
One of them just said human flesh.
Yeah.
Straight out with it.
Yeah.
But it was covered up. Not covered up, but it was kept under wraps.
It was kept under wraps so it could be revealed in a right and proper way. Because
Which is fair
enough.
You know
what newspapers are like.
Yeah.
Yeah, they propaganda.
They just make big sensational stories and headlines.
Sensationalise it, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
But
to be fair to these lads, they've not had it easy, have they? You know,
I mean,
they don't. It's not like Jordan getting his tits out.
Last thing you want is bloody paps outside your house, don't they? Calling you cleaver.
I know, yeah. Calling you out and doing that.
Yeah.
Hannibal left.
Clarice.
I ate his liver with some fava beans. But
here he is.
I think he's quite. I do.
Calling the cannibal.
You mean?
I think because
Coligno.
Coligno the cannibal.
But actually, the priest actually said they weren't condemned for it in the end, you know, given it was the...
Fair fucks, innit?
Given in the extremis of the situation.
It was God's will for them to survive.
So, you know, in view of the nature of the situation and the survival situation, they weren't condemned, which I actually think is quite good, you know, deserve it.
Yeah, they just didn't want it to be reported wrong. So They tried to keep it quiet to begin with, but then...
Didn't they do a big reveal?
Well, I was going to say, what they did was, when they were all... got some strength back, so they'd been in the hospital, they'd had medical treatment, they'd had something to eat, hot chocolate. What would be your first meal?
Do you think
they'd probably make you have like some sort of medical drink or something like that?
Maybe.
And you're like, get me a kebab in.
Yeah.
I'm fucking desperate for a kebab.
I don't know. I think you want to go vegetables and fruit after the.
Oh, yeah, you'd want to have a fucking detox, wouldn't you? Yeah. Get me on that juice diet.
Get that juicer over here.
Oh, yeah, Christ.
What's the soup? So, I'm sorry, if I've been trapped in a mountain for 72 days in the snow, I don't want a fucking carrot.
I'd say I want a steak, but I don't know. I know I'd have.
To be fair,
pudding, chips and gravy from Chippy.
Oh, yeah.
Pink wet and babbies yet. Not literally, eh? He won't touch the sides.
No. Yeah, put it like a bobsled.
Like a plane seat on a mountain set. Yeah.
In the end, they have a big press conference and each of the survivors in turn stands up.
Tells a bit of a story.
Talks about what's happened and tells
a bit of a show on.
What they've been through. And that sort of puts to bed any like ill feeling that might have been brewing in the community or in the press to actually why they had eaten these other people, which is nice.
Yeah, it is.
And I think
it's quite an inspirational story, to be honest. It's a true tale of survival.
And I don't think any animosity was held against them for what they did by the, like you said, heavily Catholic local communities.
No.
Well, some of the families said they liked the idea that the deceased loved one is living on in the people that survived, you know.
I'm sure I had a shit by now.
Bloody hell. Come on.
Well, fair fucks to them.
Do you reckon they're all big fat cunts now?
No, I saw
oh yeah, I saw him up road over there getting his paper on a Sunday.
I saw a couple of interviews actually, they looked pretty trim.
They would do. To be honest, it's probably, yeah.
They're all veggies now.
Fuck that. I'd have troughed.
I would be a fat bat. I would be drowning in my own cholesterol now.
Yeah. I reckon they're all vegan now.
Yeah, maybe. I
think it turned them.
Yeah. So there you go. The story of the Andes miracle men in the snow and then they're eating the people and then they're walking it out. Well done, Roy.
Good lad, Roy. It's all about you.
And Roy still got back with three boxes left over, three cartons, made a killing.
I buy all my tabs off him. I'm telling you, he keeps me going in black market fags.
No health warnings on him.
I like him like that. I don't like it when you can see someone's dick dropping off in front of a pack of fags.
None of us even smoke.
Don't spoil the magic. Jesus Christ.
Don't spoil the magic. So yeah, get in touch with us on Twitter, Facebook,
Instagram, email. Have we got an email? I don't think we've got an email yet. Yeah, we'll sort it out.
We'll sort it out. But in the meantime, social media, we have got a present.
Get us some reviews on iTunes.
Those
that'd
are
be
essential.
Cracking proper good, wouldn't it? Oh, it's been lovely. It's been jubbly. It's been fan-dubbly. Also, we'll see you very soon. I've been Christopher.
I've been Oriel.
And I'm Paul.
See you later.
Bye. Laid low. Did a grump that dog.